She fixed her eyes very, very firmly on the guttering of the roof of the decrepit warehouse opposite, which had been annoying her for weeks, because it was clearly going to fall off, and she wondered if anyone was going to do anything about it, or whether she ought to say something to somebody, and didn't think for a moment about the fact that she was standing on the hands of someone who wasn't standing on anything at all. "Now," said Arthur, "take your weight off your left foot." She thought that the warehouse belonged to the carpet company who had their offices round the corner, and took her weight off her left foot, so she should probably go and see them about the gutter. "Now," said Arthur, "take the weight off your right foot." "I can't. Try." She hadn't seen the guttering from quite this angle before, and it looked to her now as if, as well as the mud and gunge up there, there might also be a bird's nest. If she leaned forward just a little and took her weight off her right foot, she could probably see it more clearly. Arthur was alarmed to see that someone down in the alley was trying to steal her bicycle. He particularly didn't want to get involved in an argument at the moment, and hoped that the guy would do it quietly and not look up. He had the quiet, shifty look of someone who habitually stole bicycles in alleys, and habitually didn't expect to find their owners hovering several feet above them. He was relaxed by both these habits and went about his job with purpose and concentration, and when he found that the bike was unarguably bound by hoops of tungsten carbide to an iron bar embedded in concrete, he peacefully bent both its wheels and went on his way. Arthur let out a long-held breath. "See what a piece of eggshell I have found you," said Fenchurch in his ear. Chapter 25. Those who are regular followers of the doings of Arthur Dent may have received an impression of his character and habits which, while it includes the truth, and of course nothing but the truth, falls somewhat short in its composition of the whole truth in all its glorious aspects. And the reasons for this are obvious. Editing, selection, and the need to balance that which is interesting with that which is relevant, and cut out all the tedious happenstance. Like this, for instance. Arthur Dent went to bed. He went up the stairs, all 15 of them, opened the door, went into his room, took off his shoes and socks, and then all the rest of his clothes, one by one, and left them in a neatly crumpled heap on the floor. He put on his pyjamas, the blue ones with the stripe. He washed his face and hands, cleaned his teeth, went to the lavatory, realised that he'd once again got all this in the wrong order, had to wash his hands again, and went to bed. He read for 15 minutes, spending the first 10 minutes of that trying to work out where in the book he'd got to the previous night. Then he turned out the light, and within a minute or so was asleep. It was dark. He lay on his left side for a good hour. After that he moved restlessly in his sleep for a moment, and then turned over to sleep on his right side. Another hour after that his eyes flickered briefly, and he slightly scratched his nose, though there was still a good 20 minutes to go before he turned back onto his left side. And so he whiled the night away, sleeping. At 4 he got up and went to the lavatory again. He opened the door to the lavatory, and so on. It's guff. It doesn't advance the action. It makes for nice fat books, such as the American market thrives on, but it doesn't actually get you anywhere. You don't, in short, want to know. But there are other omissions as well, besides the teeth cleaning and trying to find fresh socks variety. And in some of these, people have often seemed inordinately interested. What, they want to know, about all the stuff off in the wings with Arthur and Trillian? Did that ever get anywhere? To which the answer is, of course, mind your own business. And what, they say, was he up to all his nights on the planet cricket? Just because the planet didn't have Forlornest Fire Dragons or Dire Straits doesn't mean to say that everyone just sat up every night reading. Or, to take a more specific example, what about the night after the committee meeting party on prehistoric Earth? When Arthur found himself sitting on a hillside, watching the moon rise over the softly burning trees, in company with a beautiful young girl called Mella, recently escaped from a lifetime of staring every morning at 100 nearly identical photographs of moodily lit tubes of toothpaste in the art department of an advertising agency on the planet Golgafrinchen. What then? What happened next? And the answer is, of course, that the book ended. The next one didn't resume the story till 5 years later, and you can claim some take discretion too far. "This Arthur Dent," comes the cry from the furthest reaches of the galaxy, and has even now been found inscribed on a mysterious deep space probe thought to originate from an alien galaxy at a distance too hideous to contemplate. What is he, man or mouse? Is he interested in nothing more than tea and the wider issues of life? Has he no spirit? Has he no passion? Does he not, to put it in a nutshell, fuck? Those who wish to know should read on. Others may wish to skip on to the last chapter, which is a good bit and has Marvin in it.